Welcome to another Plug In America podcast. I'm Kate Baker, and I'm your host. Kitty Adams is with us today, and Kitty Adams is the executive director of Adopt-A-Charger and also the sales manager for Plug In America's annual consumer resource guide. And Kitty's here to tell us about an exciting new system for setting up charging infrastructure. Welcome, Kitty.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, the first question I want to ask you is the one I'm always curious about. How did you first get interested in EVs?
My first exposure to electric vehicles was an interview of Alexandra Paul back in the Baywatch days, and she was she showed her converted electric Rabbit. I was instantly impressed and thought, wow, an electric car. Wouldn't it be cool to have an electric car? Then soon after that, I met somebody that had an EV1, and they showed me the car and told me about it and shared their experience. And, you know, my curiosity went from, wow, wouldn't it be cool to have an electric car, to I want an electric car. So I started researching, you know, how to get an EV1, which was impossible. But I found out, luckily, like serendipitously, about the Toyota RAV4 EV program, and I put $500 down, waited 6 months, and was an original owner of a 2002 RAV4. So that was my experience owning an electric vehicle.
Ah, and from this, it gradually led you to being the executive director of Adopt-A-Charger, which, of course, leads me to the obvious question. What is the Adopt-A-Charger program?
Adopt-A-Charger is a nonprofit program that wants to encourage the widespread adoption of electric vehicles by broadening the charging infrastructure. And we take a unique approach. You know, because we're a nonprofit, we want to make sure that the bulk of the money goes to actually providing the charge. So what we do is we get a sponsor to adopt a popular destination location like a national park, state park, museum, or beach. And basically by adopting that location, the sponsor agrees to pay for the equipment, installation, maintenance, and electrical for 3 years. So the program is offered at absolutely no cost to the host. And the charge is provided free to the EV driver.
While this emphasis on fee-free charging, I mean, people pay for everything else in life, why not
right.
to charge up their car?
Well, there are a lot of different models out there right now for charging infrastructure, but having owned an electric vehicle, I realized that I wanted to do things a little bit differently. When I saw the EV charging infrastructure emerging, some of the things just didn't ring true to me. I remembered from my days having the car that 90% of the charging happens at home. You plug the car in at night when you get home, you wake up, and you have a full charge in the morning. So when you're out and about, the only time that you would actually pay to use a charger is if you really, really need it. And, you know, from an advocate side, I thought that some things just didn't make sense because, you know, people were charging up to $3 an hour for a charge that would cost you 30 cents at home. So what I was afraid was that these spots would be empty, and that would create animosity from the site holder because, you know, parking is real estate. And then on the other side, people would start to get resentment towards EV drivers because they would constantly be driving by these key prime parking spots that were sitting empty. The other thing that, you know, I kind of thought I wanted to do differently was I felt like the chargers are being crowded in commercial zones. And, you know, rarely do you have to charge at the local drugstore. Where you really need the charge is when you're 30 to 40 miles from home. And I just thought back, when I had my electric vehicle, I always wanted a charger at Leo Carrillo State Beach, 40 miles from my house, LACMA, L.A. County Museum of Art. I'd love to go there with my kids, and it was kind of tight to do the round trip. So I started to focus in on places where I always wanted to see chargers. And most of those places are nonprofit organizations and, you know, the state parks, the national parks, the museums. They're all facing budget cuts. So they're not able to offer a higher level of service to their visitors. And that's where the Adopted Charger program comes in. We help them overcome that by finding a suitable sponsor. And, you know, for the museums and for the parks, they all have sustainability programs. They all want to advance, you know, a green initiative. So by working with Adopted Charger, it helps them to do that.
What kind of response is Adopted Charger getting so far?
It's been an overwhelmingly positive response. And, you know, maybe this podcast is an opportunity to recruit some more help to the cause. I'm really, really fortunate that I have help from people like Paul Scott and Mark Geller. But I've had people call me from, Florida, Texas, Louisiana, British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, and I'm also working with my home state of Michigan. But a lot of times I just have to tell people, I will circle back to you. Right now I have 168 locations that I need to operationalize, but I will put your name on the list. So if anyone out there has ideas or if they're interested in sponsorship, I would love to hear from them.
Now, the first one just opened in Northern California. Was it this week? Can you tell us about that?
Gladly. On February 15th, we had an unveiling of our inaugural charger at Crissy Field in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. It's the area right by the Golden Gate Bridge, and that particular charger was sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the National Park Conservation Association. So we're able to provide free charging. And at the event, it was a great event. John Jarvis, the director of the National Park Service, was in attendance and gave a really inspiring speech about why it's so important to be doing what we're doing. And I was really pleased by the number of EV drivers that showed up to help celebrate. And we actually were charging 6 cars at one time at that event.
Wow.
So it was really, really neat.
I was looking at the Adopt a Charger website, and I was looking where it lists your other interests. And you listed nonviolent communication and humanistic education. I would love to know how Adopt a Charger fits in with those interests.
Well, it kind of grew out of that, I'd say, in a way. I used to be a nursery school teacher, and then I taught at an alternative charter school through LA Unified. So I was exposed to just a different approach. And, you know, by learning about nonviolent communication, I realized that, you know, if I can reach out to people in a nonviolent way, a non-threatening way, I can have so much more impact, and they can hear more of my message because I'm not putting them on the defensive. So it does help. You know, any form of advocacy, you're gonna bump up against your critics. And it's just great when you can respond to them in a calm, rational way, and it doesn't become a he said, she said, finger-pointing type of negative interaction. Instead, it becomes an exchange of information. And, you know, I can see where they're coming from and the motivation behind their actions, and they can also start to understand my perspective. So I feel like it's very, very important to try to speak in a dignified manner. And I have to say it's a practice, not a perfect for me, because I'm triggered just like the rest of us. There's a lot of negative press out there about electric vehicles that's not true right now. So sometimes I find myself getting a little bit hot under the collar. But the more I can stay centered in what I'm doing, the better and more effective I can be as an advocate. And then the humanistic education part of it really came out of just observing my own 3 daughters and how they were interacting and learning from their environment and how they would come up with solutions to, you know, everyday situations. It really made me realize that by being open-minded and allowing these kids to just germinate their natural curiosity, that the future generation are the innovators and the decision makers going forward. So I realized that I really needed to foster this in kids and allow them to explore and create, because that's the future. You know, we're not inheriting the earth from our forefathers. We're borrowing it from our kids. So I just want to stand back and let these kids do what feels right to them. And I've noticed in working with kids that they're really more socially responsible. They're really connected to their natural environment. For my kids, you know, electric vehicles are just a way of life because they've grown up with them. But also just picking up garbage on the beach and caring for people and, you know, just responding to people in need. It's really, really inspiring to see the next generation being so involved in solving society's problems.
I like that. I can certainly see how Adopt-A-Charger fits in when you lay it out like that. So speaking of the future generation, what's your ultimate vision for Adopt-A-Charger? What would you like to see happen?
Well, for me, the ultimate goal of Adopt-A-Charger is to create the greatest good for all concerned. I want this to be something where everybody is benefiting from the experience. And Mark Geller and I have talked about, you know, Adopt-A-Charger kind of being like a NPR type format, listener supported format, where people can contribute towards a particular fund to keep the charger free at that location. So instead of, you know, a few people making a lot of money on charging infrastructure, this is a chance for us to all be part of the process and make sure that the chargers are located in places that we're going to use them, and to make sure that if we ever do have to charge a fee for that, that it's realistic and based on what the actual electrical cost is. So really I want to try to engage as many people in the process as possible and hopefully inspire people to look at new innovative ways to bridge the gap and make things happen without relying on government, without relying on venture capitalists, but people, individuals coming together to make a difference.
Kitty, I love your vision, and I want to thank you for sharing it with me and with all the podcast listeners.
I want to thank you, Kate, for helping me spread the word, because I know this message is going out to the exact people who need to hear it.
This edition of the Plug in America podcast was produced by Kate Baker and edited by Joseph Puentes, with music composed by Red Bennett. The Plug in America podcast is supported by listeners like you. For more information, go to pluginamerica.org or email us at podcast@pluginamerica.org.